Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Money FM 89.3. Hey, good morning. It is the Breakfast Huddle. Elliot Danker, Manisha Tank with you. You know, nobody really wants to face the day where something bad happens to our loved ones. But the reality is it's going to happen. The reality is we've got to be prepared for it.
Yes, it's true. It's a subject people don't often want to talk about.
Yep.
But we're going to ask, how prepared are Singaporeans when it comes to end-of-life and incapacitating events?
Yeah. So according to a recent survey by Step Singapore, it found that only 28% have a finished will. And, you know, of those, a significant proportion feel it's not adequate or up-to-date. I think it's something that needs to be updated often.
Certainly, yeah. And because circumstances change all the time as well.
True.
A further 56% of respondents reported that they had no will at all, while the remaining 16% said their will was currently under development.
Ah, I've got more stats for you. The survey also reveals that 39% have no delegations or directives in place should they become incapacitated, such as lasting powers of attorney. And you've got a huge 80% who do not have life insurance.
That's a shocking number.
Oh my gosh.
80%. Goodness.
At least have insurance.
So the question is, why are Singaporeans not putting writing up a will and making it a priority?
Good question. We have on the line with us this morning Sim Bok Eng, Branch Chair, Society of Trust and Estate Practitioners, or STEP, Singapore, and also partner for Wong Partnership. Good morning, Ms. Sim. So the idea that we just talked about, this survey, was done by STEP Singapore, and it showed how Singaporeans are ill-prepared for this, for the end of life, for incapacitating events. They're not prepared to take that step. Tell us a little bit about STEP. How is this organization set up, and what is the objective here?
It's a global professional association for practitioners who specialize in family inheritance and succession planning. So the focus is actually to have this body of professionals who uphold high standards and are able to help families in their succession. So in terms of the work that we do, we work to improve public understanding on issues that families face in this area. So one of these things that we do would be like the survey that we have.
Okay.
And the other one, of course, is to promote education and then to improve the standards of the practitioner.
So let's talk about the survey then that you did, the STEP survey, right? We'll get into some of the percentages and the hard data in just a moment. But first of all, give us a sense of the context. What was the sample size?
Okay, it's 495 adult Singaporeans, but it's a representative sample in terms of the national average when it comes to people who have children, people who are married, the age group and all that. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Oh, okay. So it's basically well represented. People like Manisha and myself in that sense. And what's shocking is, and here's where the shockers start, 56% of adult Singaporeans polled do not have a will, and only 28% of Singaporeans polled had a finished will. For Manisha and myself, we talked about this yesterday, and we both don't have one. I think we have our own reasons for putting up a will. But for yourself, I mean, were you surprised by that set of statistics?
Yes, actually, it's a bit of a shocker. Be higher than 28%.
Okay.
But there we have it.
Well, and what are some of the reasons you think? I mean, like, my reason would be, still young, what? Okay, what? But what are some of the reasons that people are giving?
Okay, I think that there are three possible reasons. The primary amongst, which is like you know, I'm still young, I'm still growing my wealth. There's no rush, you know, they think about, I will have children first, then I'll think of a will.
Okay.
That's primary. Then there are smaller minority where there are more senior folk where they don't like to talk about that, right? So also mortality is a taboo to them. They don't like to deal with it.
See, that's a great point you make. Maybe I can jump in there. We can talk about that for a second, because this taboo, right? What's your take on how people are afraid of talking about end-of-life issues? And how can you even raise awareness about something like that? I suppose what we're doing right now is raising awareness, but it's tough to have these conversations.
Yes, it is. So there are still people like that who feel that talking about it would jinx it. So the usual way that we try to turn it around is to focus more on the care that your family needs, you know, to take care of your loved ones, to make sure that you don't leave them stranded if anything should happen to you.
Okay.
That one is an easier conversation to have than to focus on their mortality.
Right. And do it when you're talking over a wooden table so you can touch wood, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Miss Sim, a curveball question, if you don't mind. During this COVID-19 crisis, did you see more inquiries when it comes to setting up wills? Because, you know, there have been a lot of public announcements that the elderly are more vulnerable to COVID-19. We got to be careful. It can be quite scary what you see in the news. Did you see an increase or was it still the same?
There was an increase. You know, the way things work is quite interesting. Whenever there is a catastrophe, there is a disaster, we will see a spike in inquiry in people wanting to make wills. So this COVID is the same, but of course with the COVID, it's harder for them to make a will. Because for the will, you need the testator to sign it in the presence of two witnesses. So difficult to do during the circuit breaker. Mm. But as soon as there is signs that relaxation, that there is a spike in inquiry. And it was the same, I think, a couple of years ago when we had a couple of air crashes in a row.
Yes.
Everyone starts thinking about making a will.
Oh,
yeah. The two frontliners here didn't, no?
Yeah.
We are horrible, no?
Oh, goodness. So let's just look at some more stats, right? It was also found that 39% of those in the survey had lasting powers of attorney. Mm. And here's one that made my jaw drop. 80% do not possess life insurance. Mm. So this shows that Singaporeans don't seem to be very prepared for end of life or disability and have not made adequate arrangements for the family and loved ones. Okay, what are your thoughts around this? Obviously, this seems to be something that needs to change, but can it change?
I think it can. It's more a question of Singaporeans placing what is urgent in front of them rather than what is important. You know, so day to day, they will rush to take care of their children. They will rush to earn the money that to build their wealth.
Okay.
But I suppose that the part that they really overlook is, what are you going to do for your children? And what are you going to do with the wealth that you garner at the end of the day? You know, how are you going to pass it on to the children in a sensible manner? And how are you going to take care of the children when you're not around? So it's a question of refocusing. Perhaps stop chasing the dollar a bit and think about what you're going to do with the dollar that you already have.
We're speaking with Sim Bok Eng, who is Branch Chair, Society of Trusts and Estate Practitioners, or STEP, and also partner at Wong Partnership. Ms. Sim, so, I mean, overall, if you look at the survey results, can we compare it with other countries? Were there similar surveys done maybe around the region? Where do Singaporeans stand in terms of that overall view or preparedness for end of life?
STEP did do a survey in Australia in 2017.
Okay. Okay.
And strangely enough, the results were similar for the Australians as well. So they also have about 56-55% of the surveyed people who do not have wills, very close to ours.
But interestingly, we're not just talking about end of life here. We've also talked about incapacitating events. And it seems remarkable also that there's little insurance there in case, you know, something can go wrong or, you know, you know they say you never know what's going to happen, right? So,
yes.
So, I mean, what's behind that? Is there also, I can understand why people don't want to talk about end of life. It's a really taboo subject. But it seems like nobody talks about the chances of, you know, you could have an accident, and then what do you do about the income that's lost, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, the life insurance one seems a bit strange, but, you know, the anecdotal evidence seems to be that as soon as someone has a new baby, you run off to buy an insurance, right? But somehow that doesn't come up in the statistics.
That's really interesting stuff. Okay, in terms of what happens next, let's say you don't have a will, what would happen, you know, if you pass on and you're in that situation?
If memory serves me correct, Ms. Sim, it's Interstate Succession Act, right?
Yes.
But is that an ideal situation you want to be in?
Yeah. So you're right. The Interstate Succession Act would then apply. And the rules state that typically for someone with a spouse and children, that the spouse and the spouse will receive 50% and the children will share in the other 50%. But the tricky bit about the Intestate Succession Act is that there is a fixed category of people who will inherit in certain situations. So certain people whom you might be supporting may not inherit. So in a case that you have spouse and children, you might be supporting or maintaining your parents, but they will not benefit under the Intestate Succession Act. And the big issue under the Intestate Succession Act is, of course, also that it applies only to legitimate or adopted children. So illegitimate children, children of single parents, there's a question mark as to how they will benefit under this act.
And what about people who don't have kids, but I'm just thinking of my colleague here who will be getting married this year.
Yeah, I give everything to my cat.
If you have don't have kids but you're married, the rule under the Interstate Succession Act is that your spouse gets half and your parents get the other half.
But it's also complicated, and I'm going to dive into sensitive territory here. It's also complicated for certain religions. For example, Muslims. There is a lot governed by the Sharia court, the Sharia law. And I understand they can't really make a will. Correct me if I'm wrong, or at least the will can't be in favor of a particular person from the family. It's a little bit more stricter where this religious law is concerned.
Yes, so for Muslims, they have a bit of limitation. Mm. So their inheritance is governed by Sharia law. Mm-hmm. And under Sharia law, they can only will away 30% of their assets. And the 30% that they can will away cannot go to their stated heirs. So you cannot disturb the proportion or distribution under Sharia law, which means that the 30% tends to go to like charities or friends, people who are not related to them. But, you know, that there are different ways of dealing with succession planning for Muslim laws. For instance, the Muwis have blessed the application of survivorship for jointly held assets. So one of the possibility is that if a Muslim owns a property jointly with the wife, then it is accepted under Sharia law that the property can go entirely to the wife. So different mechanisms can be used to achieve what the testator wants.
That's a very interesting question, by the way. So there are people listening right now who may have been moved by our conversation, and they will maybe have plucked up the courage to go and start the process. What do they need to do?
Okay. My advice always is that don't be overly ambitious. Don't try to achieve the perfect will at the first go. Think in terms of the basic needs of the family first. For instance, you need to think about having an executor, somebody who will manage the assets when you're not around. Think about guardianship, appointment of guardians for any minor children. Think about providing the family with a roof over their head. And then just to make sure that they have access to funds when you're not around. Right? So once the basic blocks are in, over time when circumstances change, when wealth grows, we can always adjust the will again.
But typical Singaporean question, yeah, how much is this going to cost me?
Okay, the cost tends to depend on the person's needs, you know. If for instance, for you, Elliot, yours is a simple situation, right? Just girlfriend getting married soon and parents. So it could be a very clear distribution payment out to the parents, to the girlfriend. Okay. Then in the case of Manisha, because you have children, possibly young, then you might think a bit deeper as to what you need to go into the will. For instance, you may not want a situation where your children receive the millions of dollars as soon as they're 21. You may want to stagger out the payment. Mm. So when you need to put in more provisions, more considerations, then the cost of the will typically will be a bit more.
Okay, so I have a funny little question as we begin to wrap this up. Once that's all done, let's say, who keeps the documents? What's the safest thing to do with the documents?
Yeah, so the original will usually stays with the testator, and our advice is always that you keep it with your other important documents, your title deed, your share script, that sort of document. Hmm. Keep it safe, preferably a place where the executors will know about it or someone, the spouse, will know about it and can retrieve it.
So you need to tell everybody that you've done this?
Not advisable. Just tell perhaps the executor, because they need to know that they need to start cracking if anything happens to you, and probably their close family members.
Okay. Like what my mother does, she tells me where the bank book is and whatnot. If anything happens, I know where to go and look. I suppose a simple process is that. Wow, lots to think about, lots to learn from this. We've been speaking with Sim Bok-ing, Branch Chair, Society of Trust and Estate Practitioners, or STEP Singapore, and also partner for Wong Partnership. Ms. Sim, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you so much. Take care.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at MoneyFM893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.